I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the rapid spread of the New World screwworm across Texas is escalating concerns about the state's livestock industry. The state and the USDA are now waging a war to contain the flesh-eating parasite that was once eradicated from the United States. 11 infestations have been confirmed in Texas, with cases stretching from the border region into the northern hill country, showing how hard it is to contain the screwworm fly. Governor Greg Abbott has declared a statewide disaster and activated the State Emergency Operations Center. Authorities have also established infestation zones, and there are roadside animal checkpoints. What is the latest with the screwworm and efforts to keep it from spreading? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A parasite, once eradicated from the United States, is back and spreading across Texas and raising questions about whether officials can contain it before it causes widespread damage to livestock, wildlife, and pets. The New World screwworm has been confirmed in 12 animals in the United States since its first infestation was discovered June 3rd in a calf in Zavala County. 11 of those cases have been in Texas involving cattle, goats, and a sheep, with detections stretching from South Texas into the Hill Country, and a dog was also infected in New Mexico. Governor Greg Abbott has declared a statewide disaster and escalated the state's emergency response. What is happening on the ground in South Texas? Are ranchers reporting every suspected infestation? And what will it take to prevent screwworm from spreading across the state and across the South? Joining us are State Representative Richard Benya Raymond of Laredo. Representative Raymond, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Good to be with you, David.
Also with us is Laredo Mayor Dr. Hector Trevino. And Dr. Trevino, it's great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Dr. Galen Willsmith Burleson, a veterinarian in Dilley. And Dr. Willsmith Burleson, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we're also joined by Brianna Segura. She is the chief staff writer for the Frio Nueces Current. And Brianna Segura, welcome to The Source.
Hi, good afternoon. It's great to be on with you guys.
All right, and our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Please call in if you got questions, comments, sightings, experience with the screwworm. We're having a community conversation. We want to educate the public about what is happening here and in order to have a very robust response. So first off, so Dr. Galen Willsmith Burleson, tell us about the screwworm and why is this pest causing such alarm?
Yes, sir. And don't worry, David, you can just call me Dr. W or Dr. Galen. It's a long name. I get it. So with screwworm is a parasitic fly that lays a larva or lays eggs inside of a wound in an animal. And then that wound or that larva actually eats living flesh. Okay. So that's the scary part of this. And the producers down here are so alarmed because, you know, we had this eradicated. We hadn't seen it since the 80s. And now as it's come back, it's going to be a drain on our resources and a threat to our livestock and our pets.
So the larva, which has a sharp mandibles or teeth, is able to eat the living flesh of the animal and the screw, it digs into like a drill bit into the animal. And so it can be very hard to remove. But once the larva has its fill, it drops from the animal into the ground. It forms a hard shell, goes through its metamorphosis, and then emerges as a new fly. So that's the concern, that this is going to be growing and growing. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, because of the way that the parasite works is that it can actually stay encysted in the dirt once it falls out of the wound. It can stay in the dirt for up to 2 months. And so that is kind of the issue that we have, is that it's going to stay in our part of the world, and it'd be difficult to eradicate this pest again. Thankfully, we've got good things, but we're going to continue to talk about that.
Yeah, it's going to take everyone on board in order to get a handle on this situation. State Representative Benya, if you could, Raymond, if you could talk about the state's response.
Well, it's a response of concern. You know, I want to add at the beginning, I guess I was around 12 years old, more or less, maybe 13, when we had this happen before. My grandfather, Nicéforo Peña, was a rancher in Stark County, San Isidro to be exact, and it didn't have a 20,000 acre ranch, had about 500 acres and had to work it hard to survive. And so when this happened back then, when the screwworm became an issue back then, I can remember us, you know, with my brother and I, with my grandfather scraping up, you know, the screwworm out of a newborn calf, umbilical cord, right? And putting it into a little test tube and mailing it back to the United States Department of Agriculture. And I can remember the little planes flying over and dropping the flies. I remember the boxes that had the flies, and when the box would hit the ground, it would open, it would break open, and the flies would take off. So, I mean, I remember it well, and it was a tough thing to deal with, especially if you were a smaller rancher, right, because you didn't have a whole lot of cattle to give up. And so I think the state and the federal government understands the seriousness of this. You know, we've doing what we can do at this point. The governor, as you know, has issued an emergency declaration for the counties where we know we have it. And then also some of the surrounding counties. In our case, for example, it includes Webb County, Laredo. And, you know, I don't think we have identified specific cases in Laredo or Webb County, but given the closeness of some of the others that have been identified, it's fair to say we're at risk. But you know, the different things that the governor has done is, of course, as I said, the emergency declaration and setting up a response team led by the Texas Animal Health Commission and Texas Parks and Wildlife, working, of course, as was mentioned, with the Texas Division of Emergency Management. I think you mentioned that in your lead up. And there's a unified command center that is led by the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. The Texas Department of Agriculture is working on this as well, and USDA. It's got to be a partnership between the state and the feds. But it's trying to identify and quarantine any cattle that have been affected at this point. Maybe animals. I guess I'm focused on cattle, but there could be other animals affected as well. So trying to make sure that we keep them quarantined and within a certain area so that it doesn't spread. And yes. Also, you know, looking at inspecting cattle as they're leaving an area, or not allow them to leave unless they've been inspected and found not to have, the issue of the screwworm.
So your experience is beneficial. Let me ask you, it was when screwworm was widespread at that time, back in the 60s that you're referring to. So it was like
70s.
Almost...
I was talking about the early 70s.
70s. Okay, I don't want to age you too much. But had a wound? Was it every once in a while? Was it common, uncommon? Did it happen frequently?
Yeah. So what would happen, what I remember, again, I was a young, barely a teenager, but I remember, you know, a calf is born, so both the mother and the calf are going to have a wound. And so that's where you would scrape out. I mean, those things would get on there quick. Or, you know, I mean, it's brush country, right? So a cow might scrape itself with some of the brush that we have, that we find common in South Texas. Or... you know,
and then they would get and you would expect to get the screwworm, had to be treated, wasn't a rare occurrence, and that's what we're trying to avoid. And right. And you are correct to say that Webb County has yet to have a confirmed case. I got to take a break here. Sure. We're going to come back, find out more about the on the ground response to screwworm. If you have a question, a comment, experience, 833-877-8255. 1-800-833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're hearing what's happening on the ground in South Texas in regards to the screw worm. How are ranchers reacting? What is the state doing to try to get a handle on this spreading pest? What do we need to be on the lookout for? Give us a call if you've got a question or comment, 833-877-8255. So let's talk to Dr. Hector Trevino. He is also the mayor of Laredo, Texas, right on the border in Webb County. Dr. Trevino, can you talk about how Laredo has responded to the confirmation of screwworm nearby in LaSalle County?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. It's Victor Trevino, not Hector. It sounds about the same. But anyway, regarding humans, officials have emphasized that New World screwworm infections in people are rare, but they can occur when flies lay eggs and open wounds, less commonly in body openings such as the nose and ears. The larvae, as we know, feed on living tissue. What distinguishes them, screwworms from maggots, is that maggots feed on dead tissue. But the most important thing, a public health message we have, has to be generally focused on keeping cuts and scrapes and surgical wounds clean and covered. I happen to be a medical doctor, so I'm well in tune with wounds. Seeking medical care promptly for wounds that worsen, have unusual drainage, develop a foul odor, and appear to contain larvae with little moving objects. Monitor pets and livestock. Since animal cases are far more common than human cases, officials have to be note that screwworm is not spread by eating meat, fruits, or vegetables, and it's not considered a risk to the food supply chain. But I think for most Texans, for most people in Texas, the practical takeaway is straightforward. Protect and monitor any open wounds and seek medical attention if a wound shows signs of infection or larvae. And human cases are uncommon, but treatment is important because the larvae can cause significant tissue damage. And if left untreated, it can lead to death in animals and hopefully not humans. But this is something that I've had the privilege of seeing screwworm infections. A ranch that my grandfather used to have in Mexico, I was able to see how the maggots would go into the umbilicus of the calf and the cow on the cords. And you could see the actual screwworm moving around. So this is not a pleasant sight to see. It's an ugly sight. Those are things that we don't want to see here. So prevention is what we need to tell the people and be aware of not having open wounds, just open to fly contamination and your pets, animals, or livestock. And most importantly, in human beings, if there's something like that in your child or anybody, seek medical attention rapidly.
So they say people who are handling livestock, cattle, horses, what have you, they should be very careful when they're doing so because they could attract a screwworm. All it takes is for the fly to basically just kind of touch them on the nose or their eye or whatever, and then they could lay the eggs that quickly, very quickly. Say maybe that if you're a ranch hand handling cattle, that you should have a bandana covering your nose and your mouth, and just be aware that this is a possibility. You don't have to wear like a COVID-style mask, just something to keep the fly off your face. Is that right, Dr. Trevino?
Exactly. And when handling livestock, the best thing to do is wear gloves. I know ranchers use a lot of pocket knives to cut things, and they have to be careful not to nick themselves and, of course, be exposed to a fly landing on it. And by the time they know it, you've got an infection there. So these are things that we need to take care of. Just let everybody know that the screwworms are here. We just need to make sure that we can eradicate them by taking these precautionary measures.
Brianna Segura, chief staff writer for the Frio Nueces Current, the newspaper there. You've been talking to ranchers. They had a rancher meeting on Friday. What are ranchers telling you?
So I think that there is a lot of like fear mongering going around, which is leading to rumors. For example, like when the first case came out in LaSalle County, there was rumors that the infected calf was within the city limits. However, the judge confirmed on Monday that was not true, that now they have two cases and both have been outside of the city limits. And I think people have that misconception because we are from rural communities, right? And a lot of people do keep their livestock adjacent to their home because they live, you know, on acres inside the city limits. And, you know, just like the state rep said, and Dr. Victor, I'm sorry, sir, Trevino. I think your last name was Trevino. Yes, sir. He said, too, both of them have seen this firsthand because of their grandparents. And so I think that what is comforting to some of these third and fourth generational producers is the fact that they have seen, you know, a cure for this in the past firsthand. However, there was a lot of frustration at the beginning of this with producers because there wasn't a solution. They're like, hey, here's this problem, but we don't have a solution for you. And so now what we're hearing the talk is, okay, we released all these flies. It's been eliminated in the past. Now people, especially down in LaSalle County, are really worried about what it's going to do to their upcoming hunting season. I mean, this is bread and butter for some of those people, and it can affect wildlife. And if it affects their wildlife, it's really going to hurt their pocketbooks.
Right. So the wildlife we have talked about, so that is a major concern. Dr. Galen, about how there's eyes on, we have ranch hands working the cattle and horses and goats and sheep, but no one is keeping an eye on the deer and the javelina and whatever else is out there.
Yes, sir. So unfortunately with wildlife, there is no proven treatment. There's a lot of great preventative measures and treatments that we can do for our livestock, dog and cat. Those are easy to treat and take care of. And even in the human world, there's great treatments, much better than what we had in years past in the 70s when we kind of had it gone from our part of the world. In the wildlife realm, there's a lot of speculation. There is no good proven treatment. People are trying to do certain ivermectins and feeds. Other topicals that we have in our realm or our, you know, our abilities to use. But at the moment, because it's not easy to do, you know, drug testing and things like that on these animals, it's kind of difficult for us to know what is or isn't going to work for our wildlife. In years past, in our part of the world, and I know Brianna, so she knows in Frio, LaSalle County, and I'm a veterinarian just north of LaSalle County. Most of my clients are from LaSalle County. When our parents were younger, my dad can tell me stories about, you know, when he was a kid, we didn't have a lot of deer down here anymore because of screwworm infestations. So these wildlife producers are thinking 100% right. I mean, we're going to have lower numbers of deer and things like that, but we're going to hope that we can knock it out pretty quick by the sterile fly release and things like that to stop it. But at the moment, totally reasonable concerns. It just is kind of frustrating that we can't do much about it. If we see wildlife cases, you're encouraged to report them to Texas Parks and Wildlife. And most of these ranches are watching their stuff pretty closely. So I talked to a lot of these biologists for these places, and they're doing their best to kind of help people know what they can do safely.
So I would think that it would be when deer, when they produce a doe that are fawn, that they're that's when they're going to be most vulnerable. And that's probably why we have we have that result of if there's screwworm, we have a lack of wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
When does that happen?
We are in the meat of the season. So most fawns in South Texas are born mid-June through the end of July. Most of our fawns in this part of the world are June. So we are right smack dab in baby time for our deer. And it's the same thing. They get in the navel of the deer, and those little fawns can't overcome the source, and nobody's doing treatment to their navels like we would to our cattle.
So that's disturbing.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And it can affect our bucks as well. So a lot of our bucks at the moment are growing antlers, and they have that velvet on their antlers. And if they get a scratch or a bump on those antlers, that's considered an open wound. The screwworms can get in there and kill those guys too.
So, Dr. Victor Trevino, Laredo mayor, I mean, Laredo is like San Antonio. We have a lot of stray dogs. Is there a concern with the dog population? Also, feral cats. Has the local animal control been working on this?
Yes, definitely. We have an animal control directory here that she's very in tune to what's going on here. We do everything we can to pick up the stray dogs and make sure that they're treated for any infections. But that is something that we keep close eye on, because we're border city. We don't want anything to happen that we can't control. But on the treatment side, now that we have this conversation, on the treatment side, in humans, the treatment can be surgical debridement and antibiotics if the wound gets infected, or certain antiseptics to kill the worms. But basically, it would be wound debridement, like we treat the infected wounds on any individual. And there's also HBO treatments, that's hyperbaric oxygen treatment. If the wound is severely infected, oxygen might help the healing of the wound once the larva are extracted or debrided out.
So to be clear, because I don't understand a lot of the lingo, it would require surgery to remove if a person gets infected, say like in their nasal cavity or in a wound, or it gets deep in the wound, that you would have to go in there and physically remove them? Just taking an anti-parasitic is not going to do the job?
Yes, that would be part of the treatment. It's not the complete treatment. Anti-parasitics do work also, but in conjunction with wound debridement, if the wound is severely infected, antibiotics would also help. But there's a modality of treatment that can be done depending on where the wound is and how deep it is.
And Mayor, is Laredo concerned about this? Are people taking this seriously?
Yes, we are, and we're a close-knit community, very family-oriented, and word gets out that watch out for those flies, watch out for open wounds, keep your safe, just vigilant that you don't have any infections on the pets or any stray cats that might be showing any signs of infection, reporting to animal control, and they'll take care of picking up those stray animals.
Right. Dr. Galen, I've heard, I was talking to a feed store owner in Beeville. He's saying that Dectomax is the preferred drug that people are buying for this, but it's in short supply these days. He's having trouble restocking. Ivermectin doesn't provide the long-lasting protection that Dectomax does. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So there's two products that are considered for the treatment and prevention of screwworm miasis, and that would either be Dectomax, or there's another topical boron called Exalt. We do, and thankfully in visiting with some of our sources that we get drugs from, they have been doing their best. I mean, about 2 weeks ago when we realized that the first case happened in Zavala County, I got on the phone and made a lot of phone calls saying, hey, you know, can we get these medications filled, this, that, what have you? And they've been funneling medications this way, thankfully, so that our sources in this part of Texas have them available to producers. Every time a new shipment comes in, we get a phone call, hey, do y'all need some more? And I'll make phone calls to my producers and we're able to get them so people can treat their animals. There are lots of preventative medications out there, but not as many treatment medications. So the only two treatments would be Exalt or Dectomax. And then like ivermectin, as you were saying, is great for prevention, but it's not going to treat the miasis as those two.
Well, Dectomax is already on the shelf. Ranchers use it for things like eye worm and whatever else cattle have.
Correct.
So, I mean, but is it easy to get? Because from what I heard, it is in short supply.
So it's on back ordered most places. What they're trying to do is try to send these products to at least this part of Texas. I've got some at my clinic, but we're trying to be judicious in our use and trying to use Dectomax for the areas that are in the infested zone, rather than just everybody giving every cow a shot of Dectomax. You see what I'm saying? We want to preserve the drugs that we know work on treatment, or if these animals are leaving the infested area or the quarantine zone, if they're leaving that area, headed to another area, that's the times that we're going to give a dose of Dectomax or Exalt. versus we're preventing, hey, I'm in Atascosa County. We are not in the quarantine zone, nor are we in the surveillance zone. Those producers need to be watching Naples, monitoring, spraying with permethrin, things like that.
I got to, we're going to say goodbye to Laredo Mayor Victor Trevino. Dr. Trevino, thank you for joining us. We're going to let you go back to your job of running the city. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're learning what is happening on the ground in South Texas as people are, and ranchers and veterinarians and everyone else is responding to the spread of the screwworm, and why this is so difficult, why everyone needs to take this seriously. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With us is Laredo State Representative Richard Pena Raymond. Also with us is Dr. Galen Wilmeth Burleson, a veterinarian from Dilley. And we're also joined by Brianna Segura. She is the chief staff writer for the Frio Nueces Current. Let's go to a caller, and we're going to go to Renee. And Renee, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I was listening to this, and I am completely horrified about the stuff that you all have just discussed. I don't think anybody knows this. So I owe a great debt of gratitude to The Source and to you, David, for bringing this up and having your experts on there explain some of this stuff that has not been explained anywhere else. And I'm a news junkie. I listen to Fox, CNN, all of them. And nobody has explained this. I haven't heard it, but I was calling because my original question was, isn't this what we wanted? Isn't this what the United States wanted, though, the screw worm and measles? Didn't we want this when we voted for an administration that was going to cut regulation? You know, I can still remember, you know, Elon Musk with this huge chainsaw going like this and laughing about it. Well, this is the result of it. This and measles and no telling what else is coming down the pipeline. But every time it's kind of like that Trump is in office, we get something. Think about what happened in the first time. What did we get? You know, a disaster. And here we are again on the cusp of disaster. So it's almost like I have to think that this is what the Republicans wanted, and every person who did not vote, this is what you wanted. And it's what you are going to give the rest of the country. You know, and what are we going to do? We're going to play catch up now. We're going to spend millions and millions and millions and millions of
billions,
dollars.
Billions. But, I mean, this is really, I mean, we're trying to, like you said earlier, we're trying to give people practical information on how to deal with this. If it gets political, it just it hurts the effort to respond. So we're trying. I can talk in depth about what you're talking about, how DOGE made cuts to the screwworm monitoring program and other issues and how we got here. But I don't think that is the productive conversation that I want to have. I'm going to do that. I'm working on, and we're doing that reporting, and it'll get out there. But this is an emergency that's going to impact people's way of life and actually people themselves and their health. And so we're going to sidestep politics for now, and we'll get to the accountability issues. But this is really about, you know, how do we deal with this? But I appreciate your call, Renee. Thank you for calling in. And I want to see if this Laredo State Representative, Richard Pena Raymond, you're a Democrat, if you wanted to respond to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand. Believe me, I understand getting into the political back and forth. I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud Democrat. And I understand where the caller was coming from. But, you know, my interest and all our interest now should be, you know, what do we do? And importantly, and I think the other folks who have been on the call have been excellent. But importantly, it's to let the public know, which is what you're doing with this radio show and And we need to keep that going, letting the public know. Because again, back in when I was a kid, you know, in the early 70s, this was really about cattle more than anything else. Today, it's a different world where not only is it about cattle, and that's very important, but I think it was also touched on, and I've thought about this as well, is the deer hunting, white-tailed deer hunting industry. This is a big deal. It's going to be a big deal for them as well. And also that I feel like today compared to back then, so many more people seem to have so many more pets, right? I that's how it feels anyway. More and more people have pets, and they can be affected as well. Hopefully in the end, people won't get this, but you never know. They can, and especially little children. So you've just got to be careful. So I think we have to continue the public, education part of it. And then at the government level, obviously dropping flies, we know that works. That has started. I know that we have a facility that's being constructed in Edinburgh. And, it was supposed to be completed by November of next year. I know Governor Abbott has said that he wants it completed by May of next year. Point is, they've got to get that thing done as quick as possible. In the meantime, bringing in flies from wherever they can. I think there's a facility in Mexico.
Well, there's only one in Panama that creates the sterile flies.
Well, I think my understanding is that we've got the one in Mexico that is about to begin as well, and that the United States paid for that. So I think we control both of them. That's my understanding. Mm-hmm. And again, we've got to get that information out. But getting the flies out there, getting the public to understand, what this means and how what they can do to be vigilant, as Dr. Trevino, Mayor Trevino mentioned. So we've just got to focus on those things. I get the politics of it. Hell, we're in an election year. I've got an opponent. I've got a Republican opponent. Be glad to debate her on this any day of the week. But in the meantime, I guess those of us who are in office should be focused on how do we get this thing solved, or what can we do to prevent it from getting worse. And that's what I think that we should all be focused on.
Sure. And I know that there are people, once you get political about this, they stop listening. And what we want to do is there's plenty of opportunity down the line to get into the accountability about this, why they stopped funding these efforts. We know that the DOGE officials were saying, why are we funding this anti-screwworm facility in Mexico and Panama? It's America first. And this is what happens when you adopt that narrow view. But let's move on.
Can I say one other thing?
Of course.
Again, learning from this, what we should do moving forward, in addition to just immediately trying to solve the problem. For example, I feel like, we should probably pass legislation. It's probably got to be federal, but maybe we, can combine with something at the state level. But for example, in my simple mind, understanding this stuff, and I've been in office a long time, right? I've been in office a long time. I've seen a lot of things. And so you should learn from your past experiences. And so, for example, for me, once I knew that those flies hit Mexico, they hit Mexico, I would have started working on a buffer, of flies along the Texas-Mexico border. Start dropping flies now, man. And I would drop them on the border and move south until you caught up to where the infected areas were. So maybe we learn from that. Maybe we pass legislation that in the future, if anything like this happens, and it can be, another version of the screwworm fly or something else, right? Mm-hmm. But that maybe we put into legislation that in the future, we will do this. We will immediately establish a buffer zone, for example, on the Texas-Mexico border within,
They've been doing that for quite a while. But let me go to Jeff on the phones. And Jeff, you're on the air. And Jeff, can you hear me? Go ahead.
Yes. My question is, I have five heifers on my property. I don't own them. A rancher puts it out there. And last week, we penned them up and sprayed them with fly spray. Does that do any good at all, or is that just a waste of time?
What did you spray them with?
Just a fly spray that you use on cattle.
Okay. All right, let me go to the
liquid that you put in a sprayer.
I got you. So let's go to Dr. Galen to get your response.
Yes, sir. No, that's perfect prevention. Any fly spray, that's what I've recommended on multiple of my producers that I work with, is doing a fly spray, especially if you have like a little hand pump sprayer. They're calm enough that y'all can get close to them. Spray them down with it every couple weeks, because that's about how long a fly spray works. Now, the negative part is here in much of South Texas, we're getting lots of rain right now. So it does rinse that fly spray off. But in our normal summers and whatnot, it doesn't rain that much. So that fly spray will last you a couple weeks. So you're spot on doing good prevention. So good job.
I have a question. Galen, this is for you.
Yes, ma'am.
The kids are starting to get stock show animals.
Yes, yes.
So do you have any advice for that?
Yeah, so a lot of the heifer and steer validations are starting here in the next couple of weeks. I know LaSalle County, I believe they did theirs this last week, and then Frio County is doing theirs this weekend. Mm-hmm. I know I've spoken to some of the higher-ups in those organizations, and the plan is we're going to treat where these animals are tagged with a fly spray, or keeping a fly spray on the animal and applying it every 2 weeks. You should be able to touch them anyway and get close to them. But that's the thing. And then, of course, watching for open sores and wounds. I mean, that's the big thing across board. And if you see those wounds, there are sprays and ointments that you can put in there to kill or eradicate if any larvae get there or if any flies sit there. But fly control is the number one thing. And then if you have open wounds, trying to treat those wounds.
Perfect. Thanks.
Okay. And if anyone has questions, I mean, you know my area, Brianna, y'all can call, and I'm very good about answering questions. And I've got two staff members getting trained to be representatives through Texas Animal Health to check, inspect animals, things like that. So that's a new course that they've put out.
Right. And if you've got questions, call now. Now's a good opportunity to get answers. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we are getting the latest information about the South Texas response to the spread of screw worm. It is in the Hill Country. It is on the move. Where it stops, that's really up to us and how we respond, and if we have the right tools and if we are acting quick enough. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I'll get Elizabeth on the air with your question when we come back from this quick one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
The largest sports tournament in the world is about to arrive in Texas, the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
Teams from across the globe are set to play at Dallas Stadium and Houston Stadium in June.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just a little soccer curious, we've got you covered.
When the World Comes to Texas is a new podcast from KERA News.
We'll talk to the people holding down the sport and the culture here in Texas.
It's out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, getting the latest on the spread of screw worm. You can call in 833-877-8255. Dr. Galen, I was driving up I-35 this weekend up from Laredo. There's a checkpoint station, animal checkpoint. Is that all animals? Even if I'm driving with my dog, are you required to pull over? What's going on there?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So screw worm can affect all warm-blooded animals, including birds. That has been a question people have asked. So Texas Animal Health is primarily checking cattle, horses. They're going to stop you if you have a trailer. I don't know if when you drove by, David, that you saw, I know at times the sheriff's office have had people there to stop people if they pass by the checkpoint, but it's primarily for our livestock. They will... If they would see animals, dogs, things like that in your vehicle, they could stop you if they so needed to. But I have not heard of and have spoken with Texas Animal Health Commission, and they're not stopping people with companion animals at the moment.
So you go through the border checkpoint, you have to stop there.
Correct.
I talked to a border patrol agents. They don't really know what's going on.
No, they don't. I know that some of them are new to this and haven't been informed as much. And there is, unfortunately, at our checkpoints, not the Texas Animal Health Commission individuals there checking animals. But I want to say that the southern checkpoint is just in the surveillance zone. I'm not sure if it's in quarantine. I'd have to look at a map again to be sure. So if you're in surveillance zone, they're not going to check you. But if you're coming in and out of quarantine zone, then they will.
Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple questions about shutting down the border, keeping cattle coming in from Mexico. From what I've heard, they have stopped cattle meat coming from Mexico. And I'm kind of worried about market manipulation because it's going to make the cost of beef, like our beef, go higher. Yeah, I just wanted to ask that.
Okay.
I heard something that they had shut down the border.
So the border has been shut down to the importation of basically all animals, including beef cattle from Mexico. That happened under Biden. And that would happen for quite a long time. And that did raise beef prices in the United States. When Trump went into office, he immediately lifted that border shutdown because he wanted to lower prices. But then a few months later, he put that back in. So we're not being able to take any livestock from Mexico. And Mexico is not taking any of our livestock either. This is just one thing you do. Also, our livestock, Texas livestock, is not going into Canada or Louisiana or many other states. So this is part of the shutdown. I don't know if you wanted to respond to that, Representative Raymond.
Well, I mean, I understand consumers should be concerned.
Yeah, this is going to raise prices.
About the prices, because anytime there's a shortage of anything, well, then market demand, and then the price goes up, and you know how all that works. We've seen it with gasoline. And that's another reason why we have to get a handle on this, and gets back to what I said at the beginning, get focused on solving the problem.
Yes, sir. Let's go to Susie. Susie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was going to say that when I was a child, in 1961, we had a dog who had gotten a screwworm in the roof of her mouth, and we saved the dog. But however, there was no sewer in her mouth. There was no, and there were, we were in an area with a bunch of cattle. This was just our house, you know, our pet, and she was acting funny. We checked her mouth, and we found the hole in her mouth with the screwworm maggots, I guess you call them, I'm not sure, in her mouth, eating, munching down. And the point is that they get in through the eyes, nose.
Yeah, I got you.
You have to check all your, not just the livestock, and it does not have open wound.
Thank you, Susie, for that call. Really quickly, Dr. Galen, can you respond to that?
You're 100% right, Susie. So it's not always in wounds. If they get like a cut on their gums, anything like that, it can cause it. One of the nice things now, though, is we have great treatments for this in our companion animals now. So most of the oral, so by mouth, flea and tick preventatives that we have, if you look at the list of medications that are approved for screwworm treatment and prevention in dogs and cats, most of my clients, if they're on a good flea and tick preventative, you should be perfectly safe because it actually kills the maggots in the wounds. Doesn't necessarily prevent the flies, but it will kill the screwworm itself if it's inside of a wound. So not saying we don't need to inspect and watch for weird smells, odors, things like that in mouths, eyes, and nose, because you're 100% right. But I'm just thankful that we have such good treatment for it as compared to how it was in the 60s and 70s.
See, you look at the map where we've had confirmed cases of screwworm in Texas, and it's very spread out as far north as Tom Green County. You know, that's pretty far away from the South Texas. We've had that case in New Mexico, which is still pretty mysterious. So I'm wondering, is there an information vacuum? Is this happening and we're just not knowing about it? And I'm wondering, Brianna Segura, since you have been talking to ranchers in your area with the Frio Nueces Current, the newspaper there, are ranchers communicating to you, as I have heard, that they are very reluctant to talk to the USDA agents about what's happening on their land?
I haven't come across any that are reluctant to talk to USDA agents about what is happening on their land. I just think that farmers are can be a different breed of people, and they're not about let's post everything in our lives on social media. And that's where people tend to want to get a lot of their information.
All right, let's go to another caller. We have Steven, and Steven, you're on the air.
Howdy, y'all. Great program. I want to know what the impact of the wild hog population that migrates in and out of surveillance zones, if they're moving up into areas where we're not treating or surveilling, what kind of impact is that? Because a lot of these hunters try to control them, and they injure some, and they could just be carrying them in their migratory patterns.
All right. Thank you for that call, Stephen. So, Dr. Galen, the wild hogs, the feral hogs.
So they 100% could be a source of continuing to spread the parasite or the larva. And that's just kind of the hard part or the frustrating side of all the wildlife, right? Like our deer are going to move in and out of surveillance zones. They don't know borders. But you could also say to the effect, it's the same from animals moving across the Rio Grande, you know, from Mexico into Texas. If you look at the map and you look at the areas that this parasite has spread, you actually look and it didn't come directly across the border. It's almost kind of like it skipped over. None of our border counties, like Representative Raymond's out there in Webb County and some of his, it's not affecting those. It's kind of nice, or where Mr. Trevino's at. Our wildlife is really the fear species, or the wild card, if you will. We don't know how much or how bad they could spread it for us.
But we know that feral hogs travel a lot. Yeah. They cover a lot of territory. The fly doesn't really fly that far. It's kind of limited. So the concern is that these larvae are going to hitch a ride either through people transporting animals, or they're going to be on the back of something like a feral hog that could travel 45 miles in a week.
And that's a valid concern. Whereas we're trying to, you know, there's a lot of research going into ways that we can treat these animals. And it's the surveillance is key. Watching for wounds. If you see a wild animal that has an open wound that looks like it might be infected, you call your game warden or Texas Parks and Wildlife. And that's kind of how the recommendations are at the moment on the wildlife side of this. Unfortunately, there's just not good treatments out there for them yet, or at least proven treatments.
So, Representative Raymond, do you think that enough people are informed of people who are on the ground, that they are getting the information that they need, the tools that they need in order to combat this?
I think we're early, candidly, I think we're relatively early in the stages of really having a lot of information getting out. What you're doing today is good. I think every news outlet out there needs to get the information out, or make people aware of what's going on. And then again,
yeah, but the thing is, if the fly doesn't take weekends off, I mean, it just keeps on going.
I understand that. That's why I say that I think it needs to be, we need to continue the information distributing or getting information, dissemination of the information that this exists, so that people know. I think part of what happens is that, at least in my view, I grew up in a very small town. I didn't grow up in Laredo. I've gone there all my life because my family's from Laredo, but I grew up in a small town and really out in the country. I used to represent 25 rural towns and a lot of rural areas. And so folks that live in the bigger cities, I think, maybe don't tune in to stuff they think don't affect them. So what we're talking about here in terms of, you know, this being a problem for everyone, is that everyone needs to be aware of it. As far as a solution, we have to continue at the state and the federal level to putting people out there, whether it's inspectors with USDA inspectors or Texas Department of Agriculture, Animal Health Commission, Texas A&M AgriLife, everybody working with those landowners and working with the folks that have cattle and other livestock in those ranches to do as good a job as we can, David, to inspect and identify.
Thank you so much, State Representative Richard Binya Raymond. He is with District 42, which encompasses western Webb County and includes the city of Laredo. Dr. Galen Woolsmith Burleson, the veterinarian in the Dilley area. Appreciate that. Brianna Segura, appreciate your reporting. I picked up the latest copy of the Frio Nueces Current when I was at the Texas Best on I-35. Thank you for your reporting on that.
And thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.